Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Jesus teaches us to love our neighbor and love our enemies. Sometimes forgiveness can be a difficult task, especially when our neighbor lives within a far different culture from our own, and our enemy has heaped atrocities on our nation that can never be forgotten. It is through the efforts of one person at a time, willing to be the hands and feet of Jesus, to reach out with a forgiving and compassionate heart, to recognize that Jesus loves all peoples, that peace and understanding can be achieved. My guest today, Paula Moldenhauer, is one such person. She is actively reaching out across cultural boundaries, offering hope and healing to lonely, isolated women striving to achieve a fulfilling life of freedom here in the United States. An author, speaker, and mom of four, Paula encourages others to live free to flourish. Paula's passion for flourishing freedom takes her to unexpected places. She recently returned from Afghanistan, where she served with a non-governmental agency called SOZO International. SOZO provides education and health care for some of the poorest of the poor in a country determined to rebuild after war and that continues to stand against insurgents. She also shares her message when speaking at women's events, and it permeates her written work as well. Paula has recently spoken at the Open Door Women's Retreat and taught at the Colorado Christian Writers Conference. In September, she will keynote and offer a workshop at the Whole and Free Women's Conference in Denver. Welcome to the show, Paula.
I'm always honored to be with you, Patty. I love you, and I love the work that you do.
Paula, it is just so fun to have you on the show as well. You're just such an energetic, inspiring person, and I just love to visit with you, and I'm so excited to be able to bring your message to our listeners again today. The last time that you were on the show was back in February, and
yes.
As always, you have been really busy since then. So you've sent us some emails with some information, and from those emails, I just feel your enthusiasm. And so, tell us about your trip to New York City and your work with SOZO there.
So
Go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Well, I wanted to say you talked about going to first of all, Afghanistan. I think it kind of conjures up a lot of emotion on the part of a lot of people because of our political involvement there and our troops being there and what happened with 9/11 and all that. And it just elicits a lot of, sadly, negative feeling on the part of a lot of people, I think, in this country. And it makes it difficult for citizens here to look at the Afghan people as individuals who are as loved by Jesus and God as we are. You hear what I'm saying with that? And one of the stories that just really touched my heart, I mean, you about had me in tears when you spoke about meeting an Afghan young woman when you were visiting Ground Zero. Would you share that experience with us and what you learned from that?
Yeah, I would love to share that. And one thing that I would make clear, having just returned within the last couple of weeks from Afghanistan, is when we think about the atrocities of 9/11 and also our servicemen, so many servicemen have served in Afghanistan in very difficult, painful, scary situations. We've lost our people to this fight in Afghanistan.
Yes.
But this is not the common people. These are the same people who more directly, if you and I were at 9/11, that would be very direct. But these people are the same people who've had the Taliban and others in their homes pillaging, raping, stealing, destroying. These are the same people who lived under this regime and suffered deeply. So when I think of Afghanistan, I don't think about the insurgents and the evil committed by Afghanistan. I don't believe it happened from Afghanistan. I believe it happened from misguided, you know. And that's one of the things that is so profound, having just visited Afghanistan, is the fear that these people live in still every day is they're still, even though they have a new government, fighting against insurgents, never sure where something's going to pop up, you know. So I just wanted to make that clear before I went into the story that you were mentioning.
Absolutely. And that's what I was actually hoping that you would bring up, Paula, is the fact that we in America have to get out of that mindset of associating Afghanistan, its country and its people, with these horrible things that happened, because those people feel just as much horror towards what happened as we do.
Right.
And they live with it every day.
That was absolutely. And that was so illustrated in, I think it was last April, that I was in New York City. SOZO International is seeking to establish a new office there. And we were one of the first teams to go to New York. And we spent, you know, time prayer walking for the ministry, just praying that God would open doors so that they can minister to the Afghan people there. And we spent some time relationship building. And I had just an incredible opportunity to be with two Muslim women. One was from Afghanistan. The other was not. One was born here, but her parents immigrated as refugees, or I guess actually came as refugees, not immigrants. And she was the English teacher for the other lady. And so,
oh, wow.
Right. So it's pretty exciting. Mina is closer to my age, and Shishmita, the younger woman, is closer to my daughter's age. And my daughter was actually on the trip, too. And we really bonded with these two women. They were just delightful, beautiful, hospitable, loving women. And we did have the opportunity to go to Ground Zero to tour the 9/11 memorial with them. And it was really interesting, because my daughter and I both, and I don't know if others on the team maybe felt this, but we felt this protectiveness walking in with these two women who are, you know, they've got a head covering. One of them was more traditionally dressed as a Muslim woman than the other. But both were still head covering and obviously, you know, from that culture. But as it turned out, everyone there was so respectful, and some of the guards actually took a moment to thank the women for coming and for the courage to be there and to show their solidarity for the losses of America and our people. And as we walked together,
I am so glad to hear
that,
Paula. I just want to interrupt and say I am so glad to hear that.
Yeah, I was too. I was too. The younger woman, having been born in New York, she did not experience 9/11 as she would have experienced it as a Muslim woman. She, as I watched her, she grieved as a New Yorker. These were her people who were killed. The other thing that was really interesting is I asked her, you know, I was trying to be sensitive to what she might think or feel. And I asked her, well, so how old were you when this happened? Do you have memories? Trying to find an invasive way to open the conversation about her particular experience of what we were going through.
Right.
And she said, you know, I remember only the bullying and the hurt that I received from my classmates. She said it was really too young to know what was going on or understand, but they called me Osama's daughter and killer and all of these things. And it was very hurtful to her. And I said, oh, Shishmita, I'm so sorry. I know this was nothing to do with you. And she said, it is okay. They had much pain that needed to come out.
Oh.
Well, I mean, talk about humbling.
Yes.
To have this young woman standing in front of me, having been mistreated for something that was absolutely not her fault, she had nothing to do with, and yet she spoke with such forgiveness and grace.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The other thing that was really powerful to me as I was experiencing it with my friend who actually is a refugee from Afghanistan is I was experiencing the memorial as someone who was, I mean, I'll say traumatized by watching on TV the,
sure,
you know, just the horrific thing. But I was in Colorado, you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah. My friend was experiencing the whole thing with memories of what she had actually seen with her own eyes, experienced herself in Afghanistan as the same evil attacked her family, her friends, her people in her country. And
right.
She began to share with me stories of how a bomb would go off, and she looked at my daughter and Shashmita were standing together, and she said, maybe half of her is gone and half of her is gone, or maybe there's a finger gone or an arm gone. And then she talked about how she gets up every morning and checks social media to see if her family is safe, because any day there could be another bombing. And actually, while I was in Afghanistan, there was another bombing. 7 people were killed. The next day, there was a suicide bomber who was caught before inflicting harm on others.
Mm-hmm.
We were delayed for a year. The organization that we worked with delayed us for a year in going because there had been so many back-to-back bombings and just horrific things going on, and they wanted to, as much as possible, ensure our safety. So
sure.
These women, you know, experienced 9/11 grieving as deeply and more deeply than I was.
Yeah, every single day this is a part of their lives.
Right.
It's just unfathomable, I believe, to an American citizen living here in this country to imagine living that way.
Right.
I just can't begin to imagine what that must be like. Well, Paula, when you were back there in New York, you developed a great deal of empathy for the Afghan women. Could you, if you would, share with us your perspective on how you believe these ladies view their new environment when they come to our country? They're seeking a fulfilling life of freedom, but what is it really like for them on a day-to-day basis here?
I think the connection was so strong with the women that I met, and especially one, because we were both mothers. We were both, you know, cheering our children on, releasing them into adulthood, wanting to see them safe and happy and secure and successful. And that bond as women, as mothers, is cross-cultural, and it was immediate. And this particular woman that I especially fell in love with was incredibly loving and hospitable and welcomed our team into her home. And, you know, had a beautiful, the Afghan people come from a culture before all of the things that we know about in more recent years. They come from a culture of beauty and hospitality and art. And they welcomed us into their home with, you know, a spread of tea and Afghan treats and nuts. And it was just an incredibly honoring and loving welcome and experience for those of us who were in the home. But then she started talking about coming to the United States and how hard it was for her when she was sitting in her apartment. And she said she would just sit in the window and stare out, and across the sidewalk there was a dog sitting in the window and staring out at her. And she told the story with humor, but it made me want to cry, because that sense of being that lonely and having no language to step into her surroundings. That was really a profoundly painful thought for me. I'm a very family, social, friend kind of person, and I think she is too. And to think of her being that isolated was a very painful thought for me.
She would probably be very, you know, you think of New York City as a great place of opportunity for, oh my goodness, you know, entertainment and music and shows and shopping and all this kind of thing. And yet this lady or these ladies probably would feel very uncomfortable putting themselves into that environment because they can't even communicate with the people around them. So
right.
I can understand
that. You're learning everything new. You're learning the system, the way things work. You're learning the language. You're, you know, to go to the grocery store, you're having to learn street names that you know, are not written in your language.
Mm-hmm.
Arabic or Farsi or Pashto, they look very different than the American alphabet. You know, so
well, sure.
Even
saying
all of these strange words or find your way around, you know, it's just incredibly challenging. And then not so much for this friend, but for other friends who have young children at home. You know, as a young mom, my sanity sometimes was strapping my kids in a car seat and going. But when they first come, they don't have driver's license. How do you get a driver's license if you don't have enough language to study the rules of America and to take the test? So, you know, it's a harder process for them to find that same kind of independence and ability to reach out, even if they come from a family system where their husbands want that for them.
Yeah.
And some of them do and some of them don't, depending on how traditional the family is.
Right. Now, I'm curious to know, Paula, do these ladies take steps to learn the English language?
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
The friend that I'm talking about had met this woman at a classes for English, and then their family was in a position to invite her in as a personal tutor and actually hired her one-on-one so that she could progress more quickly. I think this family has probably more connections and understanding of the culture than many Afghans that come here. And so there are wonderful supports, and depending on the state that they seek asylum in, programs are stronger or weaker in reaching out and trying to help assimilate, well, not really assimilate, but help them navigate the culture.
Yeah, yeah. I thought you said that the other lady was her English teacher.
Yes, exactly.
Excuse me. Well, Paula, you returned from New York City and you just had this burning desire to do something right now. And I can just imagine you. I know you very well, and I can just imagine you saying, I just can't sit back and reminisce on all this and think about what I would like to do in the future. I've got to do something right now. And that prompted you to search for opportunities to tutor in-home English to refugees. And tell us what happened from there.
Well, we got home over the weekend, Monday morning. It was one of those times. And, you know, you can't meet every need. This, I think, was really just driven by the Holy Spirit in me because I didn't have a choice, really. I just couldn't get it off my mind. I picked up the phone and I started making phone calls, searching for how can I get involved? How can I help? And Lutheran Family Services does a wonderful job supporting refugees. They have several different programs. But as I talked to their representative, I knew I really wanted to be an English tutor. And so she referred me to another program through Emily Griffith, which provides in-home tutors for women who can't get out. You know, maybe they have young children at home or no transportation and they can't get out to take these English classes themselves. And so I immediately contacted the woman there and just said, you know, I want a student and I would like to serve in the Afghan community because I've met them and I have a heart for them and I love them. And so they gave me an Afghan student. In fact, this afternoon when we get off, I'll have my tutoring session with her. And she's lovely, and she happened to be, some of the Afghan women have some English, some of them have before Taliban were actually educated, even college. Others come without that, and this is a younger woman who grew up more during the harder times. I think she maybe had 6 years of education in her own country and her own language, and she had basically no English. So I just find it, I guess what I find my joy and my challenge is how can I communicate with her in a way that she starts to understand and have some proficiency with an English word or concept in English, because when the light comes on, her eyes sparkle, and that's my reward. It's amazing.
That just sounds so amazing. And another interesting thing that you brought up, Paula, how far did you have to go to find this person?
Well, that was something I found out that I didn't know that also kind of drove me to find this. But I live in the North Denver area, and there's a large population of Afghans here. There's also a large population in Colorado Springs. Part of the reason for that is most of the Afghan refugees, the men of the families served the armed forces or the U.S. government in some way. And so when they come to the United States, a lot of them are coming to, you know, maybe the Springs because of all the armed forces that are there, because maybe they sure. have a friend, you know, that served in the military that they hope to connect with. Of course, by the time they get here, because it's a long process, those men are often transferred somewhere else.
Yeah.
So they don't necessarily get to connect with their friends, but they also really like Colorado because most people may not understand this, but if you go straight across, you know, the world to the other side, Afghanistan is similarly located as far as geographical. So as we fly into Kabul, which I did a few weeks ago, we're going over mountains, just like if you were flying into Denver, you would be coming over mountains. The climate is very similar.
Oh, wow. And
so
I think, like home. I thought it would be extremely, extremely hot in Afghanistan, no?
Well, when we were there, the temperatures, and we were there in July, were very similar to what my family was experiencing here in July. The difference might be that
I'm sorry, Paula, I lost you there for a few seconds. I don't know why, but I kind of lost you for a second, so if you could repeat what you said.
So when I was in Afghanistan a few weeks ago, which was in July, the temperatures there were very similar to what my family was experiencing back home. The difference for me being in that heat was, as a woman, I had to be covered from the top of my head to my ankles. Thankfully, not my toes. I could wear sandals. But, you know, I think I experienced the heat more profoundly because of being so covered. One thing that was striking to me as I flew into Kabul, because their mountains are actually at least 10,000 feet taller than ours here.
Oh, how amazing.
Even on those,
my goodness.
Yeah. Even those tallest peaks had no snow. And I asked an Afghan that I was conversing with there, I didn't understand why, and he said, you know, 20 years ago we did have snow on the mountains at this time of year, and he said the climate has changed, and he just didn't go into much more. And then an American friend of mine who knew more about, not necessarily more than this man, the Afghan people are extremely careful about insulting and saying something unkind. So my friend who knows more about Afghanistan that I was with, I asked her about it, and she said, you know, with the Russian invasion, all of the vegetation was burned off of the mountain. That was part of the war.
Oh, my goodness.
That took
place.
And so the ravaging of the land itself will not right itself for 100 years. And that was devastating.
Oh,
so
part of
the reason we think of Afghanistan is so hot and dusty and barren looking is not because of its original state. I mean, I'm sure there are areas where there are, but part of that is the ravaging of the land because of war.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. When you were in Afghanistan, Paula, tell us, how did that experience deepen your relationship with the Lord? And what did you learn there that you have brought back with you?
I think some things you think you understand with your head, but until you experience them with your heart and your emotions and the full person, maybe you don't really get it in the same way. And, you know, I've always believed that God created all of us. We are all God's children, and He is working for the good of all of us. And being around, I'm sorry, I'm feeling quite emotional.
Oh, I don't blame you.
Being around the beautiful people in Afghanistan, and especially those, you know, who are serving with this NGO, non-governmental agency, you see the ways that we are the same. You see the compassion that they have. You see the hunger that these people have to serve their people and to give the poorest of the poor in their country a hope and a future. That is God's heart. So seeing God's heart in people who are maybe not the same religion, the same brand, most of them have not really heard about who Jesus is or why I have the faith I have, but to see that part of God that's in all of us working with a similar heart is extremely humbling and beautiful to me.
It just sounds like such a deep and moving experience, Paula. And I kind of envy you that you were able
to.
Oh,
man.
No, you go ahead, Paula. Well, I'm interrupting here.
At one point, we were in a remote area where a health clinic was built. And this was an area where internally displaced people had sort of been dumped with no resources. And because of SOZO and people who pay to help SOZO serve, many of them here in the U.S. and many of them people of faith, the lives here were preserved, and now there's a well that was dug and a health clinic, and several villages around this area are having their needs met through this location. And we had the opportunity to spend time with the women who are healthcare workers in that environment. And the Muslim people are people of prayer, and we always ask permission to pray for them before we left. And that was one of the opportunities when I was the one asked to lead the prayers. And I would, you know, speak a line and it would be translated. And I poured my heart out on behalf of these women who live in conditions that I can't even imagine and still are standing tall and strong and serving their community and trying to make their community stronger and healthier and to have a hope and a future, which is God's heart. And I was just overcome with emotion as I prayed for them. And after I finished praying, one of the ladies stood up and through translation, she said to our team, "We know that you came from a place that is safe to a place that is unsafe to encourage us. Your presence here helps us know that we are not forgotten."
Oh, how special.
So that sort of makes everything worth it. You know, I had a lot of people ask me, and even more, ask some of my friends on the team, "Why are you going to Afghanistan? It's dangerous. What are you thinking? What are you doing? You know, why would you do that? Why would you take that chance? You have a family, you have a life, whatever." That's why. Because
That's
these
why.
Are people
yeah.
just like you and me, and they need to know that in the devastation that they're facing, they are not forgotten. That's who Jesus is. I may not be able to look at them and say, "Let me tell you about Jesus," but I can show them the God who wants them to have a hope in the future, and I can show them the love that he feels for them because they see it in my eyes. And you ask me how this changed me as far as my sense of God or relationship with him. And really, I think we talk about in Christianity a lot about oneness. Because in John chapter 4, it says that, you know, when Jesus died and rose again, he made us one with him and the Father, and that the Holy Spirit lives with us, and we operate now in unity as one. And I think that my experience with God there is moving as one with Him in a way I hadn't before, in a way of compassion and sharing in the suffering and the tears that Jesus feels every day for His creation that is hurting.
Yes. Well, when you mentioned, Paula, that the Muslim people are a people of prayer, it brought back to mind a time when I was in a Bible study, and this has been quite some years ago. But the person who conducted the Bible study, I can't even remember what our subject was. It was probably other faiths, maybe. I don't know. But this, our leader brought out the fact, wouldn't it be wonderful if Christians were as dedicated to their faith as some of these other religions are? You know, I mean, if we prayed as often as we should, if we read our Bible as often as we should, if that was the total focus of our lives, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing?
You know, we were talking about that as our team debriefed from being there, and it's sort of paradoxical because as Christians, we don't earn our salvation.
Correct.
The pressure's off. Jesus purchased our eternity with God. Jesus purchased our new life that begins now with the help of the Holy Spirit, our hope and our future that is in this life and the next. Jesus did all the hard lifting. And
yes,
most
exactly.
Beliefs around the world, it's a partnership. It's we work hard and we do the right things and then we are acceptable. And it's my belief that God is so good and so perfect and so amazing that no matter how many good works I did, no matter how hard I tried to be the perfect whatever religion it is, I would never attain the perfection of God. And I need a Savior to do that for me. And so it's beautiful to see the dedication and the prayer of the people. And you're right. Wouldn't it be great if we could have that same kind of, you know, focus and passion? And I think what's interesting is for us, we have the freedom to live and pursue relationship with God in a deeper and more intimate way because we're already accepted, because we're already perfected by the blood of Christ. And what's wonderful about God is we also have the freedom to take that for granted. And
that's the thing.
I'm not saying we should. I'm saying that's how good God is.
Yeah. And I guess that's the point I was trying to make, is that we take that for granted. You know, how many times on a Sunday morning do you, I don't know if you personally, but we, people in general, wake up and say, oh, man, I really would rather not go to church today. You know,
right.
And here that is such a privilege that we have in this country. And you look at the Christians in other countries who are saying, oh man, you know, I would give anything to be able to say a prayer and say it with the confidence of knowing that somebody isn't going to burst through the door and shoot me because I did, you know? So I think I get very frustrated with the fact that we in America, like you said, we take our faith for granted. We just don't appreciate it as much as we should, I guess. We don't appreciate that grace of God and that awesomeness of God that we have as Christians.
You know,
and I'm just guilty as anybody else.
Right. Being an American in Afghanistan, you know, most people in Afghanistan, rightly or wrongly, assume that if you're from the West, you're a Christian. Of course, those of us who actually live in the West would probably say, well, that's not how I view the country that I'm living in. I don't view it as a Christian country. You know, Afghanistan is an Islamic republic, so the concept there is we're, you know, Islamic and America is Christian, and it's really not that way.
Yeah.
But as a Westerner, you know, it's acceptable for me to believe in Jesus. I'm not a citizen of their country.
Yes.
But being in that country where I knew that the people there couldn't sing praise songs to Jesus, couldn't do the things that I take for granted every day, it was a very profound experience for me. I remember thinking a lot about what you're talking about and what it was like to be there having a faith that if I was a citizen there, you know, would go against my government. And it really did make my faith while standing in that country more profound and more precious to me and more, yes, this is worth choosing no matter where I am. But it also did remind me exactly of what you said, that it's so different here. It's so different there, how we look at freedom and of religion.
Absolutely. Well, Paula, at this point, I'd like to take a short break. And when I say break, I just kind of do a little station identification thing here, if you will, because we have listeners that come into the radio show that did not come in on the first part of it, and they don't know who they're listening to or what the show is. So, listeners, you are listening to Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. My guest today is Paula Moldenhauer, and Paula's been on the show before, and I just love having her because we could talk all day. She just has so many fascinating things to talk about. And in this particular show, we're talking about her experiences both in New York City with SOZO International, where she worked with some of the Afghan people there, and also she actually made a trip to Afghanistan as well. And we've been talking about those things. And Paula, like I said, is an amazing lady in that she also does some speaking and she does a lot of writing, and we're going to get into some of that in the future of the show. But in the meantime, I would like to let you know that if you did miss part of the show, or you'd like to listen to it again, or refer the show to friends or relatives, that it is on archive. You can find it on my website, which is Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com. And there you'll find the Blog Talk Radio tab, and you'll find a listing of all the shows that we have recorded so far. And also on that website, you will find information about Paula, or I should say you'll find, well, information about Paula, but you'll also find places where you can get more information about Paula through her website, her Facebook page, her Twitter account. All those URLs will be there. Also, I'm going to add a link that she sent me to the SOZO International organization. And here coming up, we're going to be talking about her participation in the Whole and Free Women's Conference, and she has sent me a link to that, and I'll provide some information about that as well. So I would urge you to go to PattySheen.com, not so much for me, but to learn what you would like to know about my guest, specifically today, Paula. So we'll get back to the show now, and Paula, as you know, the premise of this show is for people to share ways that they have either been in a dark place themselves and found their way back to light, or ways that they lead others out of darkness into light. And your experiences with these very special ladies certainly have done that. But also, would you share with us, during all of these exciting and inspiring things that you were doing, was there a dark time for you when you just felt maybe despondent or kind of depressed, and you just were in a low place, and how did you find your way back out of that?
Oh, wow. to be honest with you, while I was in Afghanistan itself, there was just really a sense of strength and purpose. And I think if I had been long-term being exposed to some of the things that I saw, that it would have been more difficult what was so crazy to me is sometimes in the span of a very few hours, I could go emotionally from this high, high to this low, low. And so emotionally, there was this tug of war. For example, one day in the morning, we toured one of the SOZO facilities and did some teaching there and met some people there. And at SOZO, whether you're talking to a staff member or a student who is second grade or a student who is in the vocational program and, you know, 19 years old and taking business classes, or listening to the women in the literacy class or the men in the vocational training classes who are looking for ways to support their children, there's such light. There's such energy. There's such hope. They have hope in the future, and SOZO vets very carefully who their students will be, and they take the poorest of the poor in Afghanistan, those who really don't have the resources to move forward. The school for kids is taking the population that would most likely choose not to go to the free government school because the children need to work on the streets to help support their families. And so they're going into these communities and trying to educate the families on the importance of education. But they've also come up with a system where their child can go to school half day and still work half day. So their facilities are also being, you know, used more efficiently because they have a group of students in the morning who then go out and work, and then a group of students in the afternoon who worked in the morning. And when we say work, we're talking 8-year-olds. We're talking 7-year-olds.
Oh, yeah.
12-year-olds. And so these kids, you see in their eyes that they understand that they have been given a unique opportunity. And so when you're in that environment, it's such a high, high. It's incredible to see the work that's being done and to see the level of professionalism and care and passion that the SOZO staff has as they serve their people, and how they and their students want to see Afghanistan becoming all it can be and not being held back by the oppression of the last many years. So
yes,
that is such a high, high. And then one day we went to the schools, we came back home to our guest house and had lunch, and then we went into the homes of some IDPs, which is internally displaced people. What's going on in Afghanistan right now is 27 of the 36 provinces are actively at war. Mostly
wow.
The Taliban,
mm-hmm.
Some ISIS, some other types of insurgents. So what you have is Kabul was originally built to serve 250,000 people. You have about 7 million living there.
Goodness.
And you have these IDPs, these people fleeing their villages, fleeing their everything that they've known because Taliban or someone else has come in and they're trying to get away from the violence. And another tragic thing that's happening is the young girls are being married off very young, because Taliban is less likely to take a married girl than an unmarried girl.
Right.
And so they're trying to protect their daughters by marrying them before they're really old enough to understand marriage or, be able to embrace the responsibilities and duties of marriage. So it's really tragic. And so one day after lunch, we went into the home. Well, we did this several days, but this particular day was our first day, and we went into a home where 34 people who had fled their home with the clothes on their back, who traveled weeks and months, not days, to get to Kabul, are crammed into two small rooms. They're square buildings made, like of mud. Bricks. And
my.
Those two rooms, I have a modest American home, the biggest room in my house, my family room downstairs, is probably the size of those two rooms put together. And so the women and children were sleeping on the floor of these two rooms, and the men were sleeping outside in a storage container in the courtyard.
Oh, my goodness, Paula.
Yeah, these people had no resources. The men in the family would go out and try to find work as day laborers. Some of the families have fled without their husbands and fathers. Some of them are fleeing with family. Some are fleeing with neighbors. They go to Kabul because maybe their cousin's cousin lives there, or their uncle's neighbor's friend, or there's some connection. You know, the hospitality of the Afghan people, they take in people that they really have no resources to care for, but they would have nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
And so we were able to, one of those people who works at SOZO had become aware of a lot of the plight of these refugees and talked to her superiors, and her superiors applied to a grant from IDES, I believe, which is an organization here in the United States that does relief efforts and combines the monies of individuals and churches, you know, who know they can't do enough by themselves and they would like to be part of the bigger work. And I believe SOZO received $35,000 to be spent just on food, to start trying to eat the intense struggles of these IDPs. And so we would go into these homes and we would all sit around the perimeter of the room. They sit on toe shacks, which are thin rectangular cushions. So if they had enough toe shacks, we're all in toe shacks. If they didn't, sometimes they borrowed from the neighbors to try to accommodate that. And we would sit around the perimeter and through translation, we would ask them, you know, how many people are here and where did you come from, and a little of their story, and they would ask a little of our story. And then we would share food with them. And
wow.
That first time that we got back to the guest house after that experience, our team sat in the living room and cried together. And
oh,
so
I'm sure.
You ask about a dark place. It wasn't a dark place like, I don't know how to get out of this. It was just the stark reality. And so, you know, we cried together. And of course, being a person of faith, my response then was to pray for strength.
Sure. But you probably felt, I think what you were feeling probably, Paula, was just a burden of heaviness on your heart for these people.
Well, you know, for every refugee that we helped that day, there's, you know, probably 1,000 more we couldn't help.
Yeah.
And that's kind of staggering. It's very painful.
Another yes,
day
exactly.
When we went to this same area, we saw children, and I didn't know they were on this huge trash mound, and I couldn't tell if they were looking for food or toys or just playing, but it was, you know, to see children playing on trash was...
Yeah. Yes, it sounds like it would be very emotional and very, very deeply difficult to be faced with the stark reality.
Right.
And thank you for sharing that with us, Paula, because I'm sure it had to have been difficult for you to do that. So I just want to thank you for sharing that with our listeners.
Absolutely. One thing I guess I would want to point out is the Afghan people themselves feel this very deeply as well. They feel the pain for their people. They feel the fear that they walk through every day. And they're good people trying to figure out how to move forward, how to find hope in a difficult situation. And one thing that was really encouraging to me is they are also people of laughter and love, and they understand the strength that comes in sharing good food and telling good stories and teasing each other and loving each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself brings great hope.
It's interesting you should bring that up, Paula, because not too long ago I interviewed a lady who went on a mission trip, and she went to the Philippines. And she said one of the things that impressed her and her team the most was the fact that these people who have so little are always so full of joy. She said from the minute they stepped off of the bus, everybody they met had this big smile for that. She said it didn't matter that they didn't even know why they were there. They just greeted them with this huge smile. And she said all the little children were just, well, I guess they did like a vacation Bible school type thing at one point. And she said the things that those little children were absolutely fascinated with, like the little colored stickers that they brought along, and, you know, just the things that we in America consider so mundane. But she said it was just that overwhelming joy of these people that just have so little that just really, and I've heard this from so many people that have been to other countries, that these people that live in this abject poverty and have so little to look forward to are just absolutely full of joy. And it's just amazing to me.
It really is a lesson in understanding how good God is and how He's given us gifts to enjoy that in our
yes.
American entitlement, we just miss sometimes. This morning, I have a little tiny pot of herbs in my backyard, and I'm not a great gardener, herb grower, but I picked some lemon thyme to throw in my husband's breakfast. And as I was, you know, pulling the little leaves off to put them in the oil to begin to simmer and savor and bring this, you know, the fragrance is just incredible. And it's like, this isn't a lemon. It grows in a place a lemon couldn't grow. But here it is. And how can we think that there's no God who's orchestrating these gifts for us?
Exactly.
I was overwhelmed just in that moment by how many gifts there are in this natural world that He has given us to savor and enjoy.
Exactly. Well, Paula, I'd like to turn to kind of a little different subject now. I know this is in the past, but you did speak at the Open Door Women's Retreat. Could you just tell us a little bit about what type of audience did that retreat serve? And what was, you talked about an outstanding characteristic that you learned about these women that kind of ties in a little bit with what we're just talking about.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that. I was very honored to be asked to be the retreat speaker for Open Door Fellowship, which is just an amazing ministry in Denver where people who are coming off of drugs or prostitution or homelessness or other, you know, problems that we have in this country
right.
and especially in our cities, find a safe place, find a welcoming place, find help and support to start a new life. And so I got to talk with these women. Some of them, I think one woman there was basically there because somebody had given her a scholarship and she had been dry from, I don't know if it was drugs or alcohol or whatever, for, you know, hours.
Yeah.
And there were other women there who had been a part of this community for years and who are now loving and supporting the newcomers that come in and understand the intense struggle, you know, to turn from the addictions and the abuse that they've lived with and step into a different way of life through Jesus.
Right.
And so we had a wonderful time together. They were beautiful, amazing, loving women of courage and strength. And that's what I keep finding, whether it's Afghanistan or Open Door Fellowship or just even, you know, some of them were mainstream churches or retreats that I speak at. Women who have gone through brokenness, women who face struggle, and really don't we all at some level. We learn compassion and we gain strength in ways that are amazing and unfathomable and really just miraculous. And that's what I found at Open Door Fellowship. And I'm guessing you maybe read a story that I sent out a while back, but in the closing time together, we had some really profound things where the Lord really ministered, especially to motherhood, both as daughters who've had good mothers and mothers that had problems, but also as mothers who feel like we have failed our children. You know, there was a real movement of the Spirit to talk to us about the mother heart of God and how much He loved us. And then there was some really great worship time and some wonderful sharing of scripture and truth from God's word. And at the very end, as we were worshiping, I went to the back and just was overwhelmed with emotion and was praising God. And He just sort of tapped me on the shoulder, and I looked around the room, and He said to me, "See how much they love you."
Mm-hmm.
And I was overwhelmed as I just stopped my own worship and looked around at the worship of the women in the group, pretenses down, totally in love with Jesus and grateful for the changes He made in their life. It's one of those, you know, just beautiful, intimate experiences between the Lord and you, really. He was sharing His joy at being loved by these women. And it's one of the greatest experiences of my life.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That just sounds so moving and so neat. Well, you have another event coming up, Paula, and you have a speaking engagement at the Whole and Free Women's Conference, which is going to be held in Denver this September. So would you tell us about the conference? What audience does it speak to the most? What opportunities await the conferees? When is the conference? Those kind of important things that we'd like to know.
Absolutely. So that conference is September 28 and 29, so that's a Friday night and Saturday morning and afternoon.
Oh, wow, so it's not like a lot of days.
Friday night, 6 to 9, Saturday, 9 to 6.
Oh, how neat. Wow.
It's really for anyone. If you're a female. We have people attending from across the nation. Bridgeway Church is the location that will host the conference. The woman who is the host of the conference is a friend of mine. She's an amazing, powerful woman of faith. Her name is Jendai Harris. And really, her heart is to offer the conference that equips women, whether it be at home, in ministry, in the marketplace, in our personal lives, our inner freedom, our finances, our health, our relationships, our business. And, you know, her heart is to see women living powerful lives of freedom and wholeness. She wants to help.
It sounds like she covers many facets of being a woman, and it sounds really amazing.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I'm one of the keynote speakers on Friday, and there's some others on Saturday, and there are workshops on Saturday. I'm teaching a workshop on marriage on Saturday, but there are workshops about being single or how to deal with your health or how to start a ministry or how to move forward, you know, in your business and with your family and your relationships, your finances. So, you know, it's just really an all-encompassing opportunity to grow and come together with like-minded women. You know, we are God's masterpiece.
Yeah.
You know, women are the last thing created. We are the last
created.
You know, in the creation story. I believe God continues to create, but when the creation story ends, it ends with the making of woman, the final touch on the masterpiece. And so Jesus Himself elevated the status of women. He allowed women to follow His ministry. He cared for them. He healed them. And that's kind of the heart of this conference. You know, God has elevated us as women. He wants us to live whole and free, and He wants us to be powerhouses to invite others into the goodness that He has to offer.
It just sounds like a great time of networking and fellowship and learning and growing. And it sounds wonderful, Paula.
I'm really excited to get to be a part of it.
Oh, absolutely. And for listeners, I will put information about the conference up on the website once again under the Blog Talk Radio tab under Paula's show. So if that's okay with you, Paula, you had sent me a list of some of the workshops and things. And okay, yeah, I will advertise that as much as I possibly can through, through the show and through the website and all that, because it sounds like a fantastic opportunity. And I'm under the impression it's for basically women of all ages, that it will meet the needs of a whole range of women, not just necessarily young married women, but maybe older women like me who are widowed or whatever.
Absolutely.
Is that true?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's definitely pulling from a cross section of ages and faith styles and cultural backgrounds within, the American context. And I love that. It's just arms open wide, no matter your age, no matter your marital status, single on one end or widowed on the other end or somewhere in between, married with, I'm married with four kids. And
some of them are out of the house by now.
Well, we only have one at home, and he's getting married in a few months. So I'm on that empty nest journey.
Well, Paula, thank you so much for sharing that with us, and you shared so much with us today, but is there anything else you would like to say before we do close out the show?
Well, I did want to mention that the Whole and Free Women's Conference is extremely well priced. The goal
price. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yes. Actually, the early bird, which closed last month, was $39. I mean, that's just kind of
unheard of, and
it includes lunch. And so I think now we're at maybe $59 through this month, and it will continue to go up. But the conference host, Jendai Harris, she doesn't want anyone left behind. So if finances are an issue, there are ways to volunteer to reduce your costs. There are discounts for students or people on a fixed budget or teachers, people who sincerely would have, a hard time paying the full price. There's all kinds
right.
of scholarship and reduced price opportunities. Really just need to email Jendai, let her know how much you want to come, and she's going to work with you to find a place for you to volunteer or to find a scholarship or whatever it takes to get you there. And I love that about her.
Her heart
is so open and inclusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like she's focused on her mission to reach these women more than she is on any kind of financial gain, so to speak. Definitely.
Absolutely.
Well, that is wonderful, Paula. Okay, well, listen, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. Like I said, I always love to have you. I should just schedule you like every 3 months or so, because you always have some fascinating new thing going on in your life.
Oh, well, so, I've got something else like going on that I'm not ready to talk about. So 3 months is maybe a great idea.
Okay, all right, I'll keep you in mind.
Besides, I just love to spend time with you, Pat. You're amazing.
Thank you. Well, I'd love to see you again. It just hasn't worked out. I wanted to go to CCWC, but, I was kind of swamped with home repair stuff this year, and I had some health issues going on, and I just didn't get up there. I was disappointed, but I kind of felt like God was telling me, you know what, you've been going to these conferences forever. Let's see you put some effort into the writing now instead of sitting in classes and workshops.
Now,
I've been trying to do that and get something productive going here. So,
well, maybe it would be encouraging to you. When I heard your opening spiel for this radio broadcast, I thought, she is such a good writer. So maybe that would be an encouragement.
Oh, my goodness.
That was my thought right then.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, anyway, Paula, may God bless you richly in all that you do. And once again, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me, Pat. Much love to you.
All righty, you too. To our listeners, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. Don't forget to go to pattysheene.com. That's PattySheene.com. And look for this show and other shows that we have broadcast. And be sure and go into the more information tab for each show. And there you will find the websites and the resource information, for example, today for Paula for the conference and for the Sozo International website and her social media outlets. And you'll find that under all the shows for the guests that have been that have been on here. So until next time, may God bless you all. Thank you for listening.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a candle, and makes it
Western bacon cheeseburger cheese, bacon Western bacon cheeseburger. I'm talking Carl Jr., pick it up. Western bacon cheeseburger, Carl Jr., pick it up.
Pros in the know start with Lowe's, because Lowe's has exclusive offers this week just for pro customers. For 2 days only, ask for 5% off all purchases made in-store. And when you use your Lowe's business credit account, save an additional 5%. That's 5% off all purchases and an extra 5% if you use your Lowe's business credit account. See the pro desk in-store for more details. So, pro, now that you know, start with Lowe's. Offer valid 81382, subject to credit approval and can't be combined with other credit offers. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Excludes Lowe's Visa Rewards cardholders. U.S. only.